from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines and for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Good morning. Welcome into the Insiders. I am James Hamm. Joining me today, we had Jesse Tapia filling in for Kyle Madsen. Kyle is, of course, on vacation. Jesse, we have so much to talk about today. We got Hall of Fame inductions. We've got De'Aaron Fox named to the Team USA. We've got the Bucks chaos.
Can't lie, that Bucks story, like, I've had my eye on that Bucks story since last night. I'm a little excited to talk about that one.
Are you?
Yeah.
The one I got circled is the chaos with the family members in Dallas.
Yeah, the AAU Dallas Cowboys. That was hilarious when you showed me this morning too.
We are all here for the Dallas Cowboys to fall apart and splinter through X, Twitter.
Yeah, through X and through their family members also.
Family members. So let's hit this thing running. Jesse, is it the Hall of Really Good? Hall of Very Good? Hall of Probably a Hall of Famer.
Looking at Joe Maurer, Todd Helton, and Adrian Beltre, it's the Hall of, like, whatever's between very good and, like, Hall of Fame. If there's, like, a little line between there, a little thin line, I guess. Because we were looking at the numbers before, and it's like, you can make the arguments. There's arguments to be made for all three of them.
I agree. You can make the arguments. Joe Maurer, of course, is, as far as catchers go, one of the best hitting catchers in the history of the game. Adrian Beltre is one of the best hitting third basemen in the history of the game, and he's second in games played at third base only to Brooks Robinson. I believe I saw that stat yesterday.
He's got over 3,000 hits, I think 477 home runs.
Yeah, he's got over 3,000. I mean, like, his credentials are there, but really the weird thing about Beltre's career is most of his damage and most of his accolades came after the age of 30. Like 31, 32, 33, all the way to like 37, he was spectacular. So that always, like,
it's always going to be the baseball thing, no matter what. It's always going to be in the back of your mind.
It is always going to be in the back of your mind that, like, was it all clean? But, like, look, I think he is a first ballot Hall of Famer. And then Todd Helton, and it took him a long time to get in. And, like, we looked at his stats. I'm not convinced that, you know, again, he's a great hitter. But not a big home run hitter, you know, 380 something home runs or 369 home runs, I think we got. You know, plenty of RBI. But he played in a very, very hitter friendly park for his entire career in Colorado. And, like, we were talking about it, and I compared, I'm like, if Todd Helton's in the Hall of Fame, then I need to see Dale Murphy in the Hall of Fame. Like, I know one is a better hitter, like, career wise, but, like, Dale Murphy won two MVPs in the 80s. And
yeah, if you get two MVPs, I mean, I feel like that's just automatic you're in.
Yeah, you would think so, right? But the fact is, he hasn't got in, and it's, you know, he's got 5 gold gloves, 7-time All-Star, 4-time Silver Slugger. I would say that if you're going to allow in, again, a player like Todd Helton, who, you know, 5-time All-Star, 3 gold gloves, 4-time Silver Slugger, a batting title, like, all those things, that's fine. But like criteria, because it used to be 3,000 hits in your auto entry. He finishes with 2,500 hits. He's a career 316 hitter, so you can't take that away from him. But at this, again, hitter-friendly park for the entirety of his career, I don't know.
I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head right there. Like, there's no criteria for this. It's just kind of like with some of the guys who have got in that played in the steroid era that were named on reports and get in. Some guys who also were named but didn't get in. It's just there's no criteria for this at all.
Yeah, I think that that's the interesting thing, that the criteria used to be very set for the Baseball Hall of Fame. You hit 3,000 hits, you're in. You hit 500 home runs, you're in, right? Very rarely did you have, back in the good old days, a guy who had 3,000 hits and 500 home runs, because the home run hitters then used to strike out a lot. But now we've seen this shift. And I like that a guy like Fred McGriff, who wasn't ever the best of the best of the best, but he gets in because like the consistency of his career was incredible. But I'm just not sold that like we're, I think it's going to get more and more watered down over the coming years.
I think that's the thing too.
Yeah, until we get past the steroid era. And then it's like, what do we do now, right?
They almost need like that new generation of guys who are eligible.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. De'Aaron Fox, one of 41 players named to the Team USA group that was invited to compete for one of the 12 spots for the 2024 Olympics in Paris.
Is this something or nothing to you?
I don't know. I was there the last time he almost made it on the Olympic team, right? And he walked away at the last second, and it was very complicated. And I know that like when you burn a bridge, when you walk away from Team USA, you're burning a bridge. And I was down in LA. It was at the Honda Center where the Kings tried to relocate to in like 2011 in Anaheim. And what happened was they played Spain, the Spanish national team, on like a Friday night. The next day, the team was loading up to fly to Australia, where they would be gone for, they were going to be like 2 weeks, 3 weeks in Australia to acclimate, and then they were going to China for the Olympics. So it was going to be like a 6-week commitment, and Team USA had not committed to him making the team yet. They were going to carry like one or two extra players to Australia with them, and then you got to the game against Spain, and he was the third point guard behind Derek White and barely played. And at that moment, I asked De'Aaron after the game, I'm like, so what's your role? And he goes, I don't know. I'm like, oh, okay. And then the next day we find out he decided not to board the plane and go on this 6-week adventure, not knowing what would happen. And part of it was because his agent at the time, Chris Gaston, was getting married, and he had already committed to being part of the wedding party, and he was going to miss that if he went to the Olympics. But I think Team USA usually holds a grudge, and so I'm surprised he did get another opportunity. I think it really will come down to whether he wants to be there or not. And it's a star-studded group, man. I don't know. They're going to have to make some tough cuts, and a lot of those tough cuts, it should be like the over 35 group that they should make some cuts. But how do you tell, you know?
Yeah, D'Lo and Casey yesterday, the three names they were talking about was two mainly. It was Jrue Holiday and Draymond Green. Maybe he gets in over one of those guys.
Well, I think Draymond Green, it's possible that that they said he's not going to be part of this group. So yeah, it's possible. But, you know, you're looking at fighting against Steph Curry and Damian Lillard and
Devin Booker. I'm sure he'll be in there too.
Well, maybe. Yeah. I mean, and I think you're going to take some of the guys that played for you last time. So Tyrese Halliburton probably even has a leg up.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So I think it's going to be complicated, you know, like who you take and who you don't. And it's one thing to be like invited to be one of the best 41 and, you know, American born players. But at the same time, man, it's a tough group to break into. I don't know if
maybe this is the start. Maybe we're just building the bridge back now. This is how we get it started.
Okay. That makes sense. They got a new coach. They've got a new director running things. It's Grant Hill now. So we'll have to see how it all works out. Now let's get to this Buck story, because this Buck story is crazy.
Yeah. Did you see about Doc Rivers being a consultant with them for a couple months?
Yeah. So in December, they hired Doc Rivers to consult with Adrian Griffin. Like, yep. He was there consulting, like not there, but like I assume like phone, Zoom, like, hey, let's give the guy some support and figure it out. And then I don't know what happens there, but did Doc just go like, hey, it's not working out. Like, this, he's not listening, or we're not making progress here. and you probably just need to like replace him with me.
I'm sure. I'm not sure that's exactly what went down, but I'm sure it's some of that. Like, he's there or whatever. I'm sure he's in their ear a little bit. But yeah, this whole story is crazy. I mean, with Adrian Griffin, we've been hearing about him since before the season even started. When Terry Stotts left, Bobby Portis ripped him a new one. I think it was after a Pacers loss. So like, yeah, it hasn't been quiet for him.
Yeah, it's been a really, really rough first head coaching job. And I don't know, like, to be honest, that everyone's like, I hope he gets another shot. I hope he gets another shot. It's like, oh,
that's kind of tough. Yeah, you didn't last 41 games and you had like one of the greatest players to ever do it on your team.
Well, and Jesse, I think more importantly, they're good.
Exactly. Yeah, they're 30 and 13, I think, right now.
30 and 13. They're second in the Eastern Conference. This reminds me of the Dave Blatt situation where the Cavs are like, yeah, we're done.
They just got completely sick of him.
Yeah. So, but to have that happen after one, not even a year, like 3 months on the job, that's tough, man.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you look at the record, okay, like obviously it didn't affect you to where you're losing games, but it's bad enough to where like you can't even be here anymore. So yeah. Obviously he lost the locker room, or he lost Giannis.
I would agree, or Dame, or someone like there was some kickback from the players. Clearly, this is a player driven situation. On a good note, if you're a Dave Yeager fan, there are rumors this morning that Dave might join Doc Rivers in Milwaukee. Dave, of course, was on Doc Rivers' staff last year in Philadelphia, and he's not out of the league, but he too is a coaching consultant for the Cleveland Cavaliers right now, which means he's not on the bench or anything. So I could easily see him moving into a lead assistant role with the Milwaukee Bucks and getting back together with Doc like they were last year.
Yeah, that makes sense. You can tell Dave's pretty respected around the league, because even after he was let go by the Kings, he hasn't had trouble finding hanging on with the team or anything like that. He's always been brought in. So yeah, I could see that happening big time.
Yeah, and I think the reason why Dave didn't fully get back and really throw his name in for a bunch of head coaching jobs is he's battled cancer over the last couple of years, and it's a painful issue, like with I think jaw mouth cancer. It's not been pleasant for him, and so I think it's one of those things where you know, in order to make a commitment to be there with the team full time every single day and be the voice and all that stuff, maybe he just physically wasn't ready, and maybe he's getting closer to being ready, and he's had a little bit of time here to relax and kind of, you know, reset himself. So yeah, I think it's a good thing. He's a really, really good X's and O's coach.
You think this switch right here with Adrian Griffin and Doc Rivers, you think that can fix, I guess, their problems? You think this does anything for the Bucks? I mean, because they are 30 and 13, so like, how bad is it? Like, I guess on the court.
Yeah, I mean, I think Doc Rivers has always been a player's coach. Players love him. Now, whether that equates to him being a great coach, I don't know. You know, you do need the X's and O's guys to go with Doc. And, you know, I think that's why him and Dave are probably a really good marriage. Dave is like a really, really good technical coach. And so, yeah, I mean, if you can connect, maybe. But what's Doc got? Like one ring from the Celtics championship?
The 2008 Celtics, one of the greatest teams of all time.
There you are. And, you know, Jesse, we probably shouldn't just hit this really quickly, because I think we all want to revel in this. But this Cowboy story is wild, absolutely wild. So CeeDee Lamb's mom not only said that she would like her son to be traded out of Dallas, but also tweeted out in all caps, "Dak isn't it." Dak Prescott's brother, Tad, "Trust me, if I could get at Dak to leave Dallas, I would." And then Micah Parsons' brother, Terrence, chimes in, "Take $40 million or pack your bags," about Dak. Like, this is crazy talk.
It's full-on AAU basketball type stuff. It's hilarious too, because you were telling me about this before the show, and in my mind I'm like laughing. It's like, oh, like maybe James like reading off like some meme or whatever. It's like, nope, look on ESPN. It was Get Up this morning. Yeah, they're talking about it too.
Yeah, I mean, it literally is. It's the entirety of the like.
And it is family members, so I guess how much stock do you put into it, just given, like, you know, everyone talks or whatever, but I don't know. Like, Dallas flamed out again in the playoffs. You wonder how much it has to do with maybe they're broken.
I think so, yeah. All right, well, let's hit this after the break. To be honest with you, I want to, like, digest this a little bit more. I think it's hilarious, and I'm here for it, but, you know, we do have to pay the bills. So we're going to step aside. You're listening to The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back in. We are the Insiders here on ESPN 1320. I'm James. He's Jesse, filling in for the great Kyle Madsen. We're discussing this epic meltdown that is the Dallas Cowboys. CeeDee Lamb's mom, I guess in one tweet, actually somebody had responded to her saying, come to the Texans. And she said something like, you know, CJ is nice or something, like talking about CJ Stroud. Like, I think this is just, it's fun, but when you're... people are asking, what, you know, how do you walk in? Or you were saying, like, how do you walk into the locker room after something like this? And, like, we dealt with it in Sacramento. And,
yeah, a couple years ago, right?
Well, we dealt with it in Marvin Bagley, but it started years before. We had the situation where TJ Fredette went ballistic on the Kings on social media. And Jimmer, number one, told his brother not to do that again. But also... like took to the media, like had a media scrum and said, look, I apologize for everything that my brother said. He doesn't represent me or my family. You know, it is what it is, right? Like he lost his cool. I've had a conversation with him. It won't happen again. And I don't think it did after that. We didn't really have that problem ever again. But that can be super divisive, especially in a day and age where all of these players were like, they grew up on social media, right? So when my first years, when like 2010, 11, my first season, it wasn't such an issue. Like, yeah, there are guys that are on social media, right? Twitter, like 2008, 2009, whatever. But it's different when you grow up, right? So, like, Jesse, you are a product of, like, social media.
Oh, yeah, I grew up on the internet.
Yeah, like, not only the internet, but, like, Instagram and Twitter being, like, a huge part of your daily, like, life.
Yeah.
Well, before, there was that stuff before. Like, sure, there's, like, MySpace and Facebook and all this stuff, but where we're at now... it's just so strange because these guys do live and they see everything.
Well, it's just like you said, my generation growing up through social media, but it's also like the parents too. Like now they're all on and stuff like that. Never used it before. So they're all kind of just learning the, I guess you want to call it ethics and whatever you want to call it of social media.
No, that's a good point. Like the parents have lost their way sometimes. And I mean, realistically, that's what we had with Marvin Bagley here. I never once had a like harsh thing to say about Marvin Bagley, the human being. I thought Marvin was a good kid, a hard worker. You know, he meant well. He wanted to be great. You know, the rap stuff is perfectly fine with me. I think, you know, players need their vices and, you know, their things that they do outside of basketball. I think a lot of players come into the league and they don't have something. And that's a bigger problem than someone who does have something. And then, but his dad being such a divisive person, it didn't just cause problems for Marvin in general or Marvin with the coaching staff, like him going out there and calling Dave Yeager Coach Yogurt. it became an issue within the locker room where we even had De'Aaron Fox at one time come out and say, like, take my name out of your mouth.
Yeah, how much of that would have been fixed, do you think, if Marvin went the Jimmer Fredette way and just said, like, my dad is my dad, he says what he says, but that doesn't represent me, and that has nothing to do with me, really.
Yeah, that would have been it would have been a big thing. But Marvin was very young. Like, again, Jimmer comes into the league at 22, 23.
Yeah, Marvin was like, what, 19, 20?
19, yeah. And even his first couple of years, he's a very young 19. And that's okay. Like, again, Marvin's a good kid, but his inability to stop, to tell his dad, hey, dude, you have to stop now. And for his dad to take that and actually, you know, take the advice and do it, it's hurt Marvin, and it's hurt, like, the rest of the crew that came up through the basketball world. You know, we've already seen Marcus is not in the league. And, like, look.
Yeah, because they'll hold that stuff against you.
Well, yeah, not only that, but no one's going to put up with that stuff when you're a fringe NBA player. If you're a really good, it's like the, you know, what is it, LiAngelo Ball?
Yeah.
Like the middle ball brother. Well, he wasn't great. He probably could have fought his way and maybe got into the league. But the fact that you got to deal with so much of the extra BS stuff, it's not worth it. And so, like, LaMelo and you know, Lonzo, yeah, they're worth it.
Yeah, you give them max contracts.
Yeah, they're top five picks in the draft. They're worth it. Somebody who's not at that level, like, look, you're never going to put up with it. You're just not. And so NBA teams just pass. And it's unfortunate, but, man, it's the reality of the situation. This is crazy, though.
Well, yeah, because with Dallas, too, like, taking it back to the Cowboys, is like, they already have their problems. Like, now we got Jerry Jones bringing back Mike McCarthy, and that was discussed, and I don't want to say it was controversial or whatever, but just personally, like, are you really going to bring this guy back again? It's just, now you got more drama. And, of course, it's up to them how much stock you put into it, how much you let it get into the locker room and stuff like that, but it's just, I don't know, you could tell things aren't great in Dallas.
No, they aren't, but I think that it's a good discussion to bring up that, like, part of this is that they are rudderless, that everybody knows that the same exact group is coming back, and Dak has backed the coach. And I don't know that everyone there would back the coach, and that's a problem. So you also, your figurehead, your coach, I don't know that he has the ability to go and say, hey, knock this off, because I don't think some of them are listening. Like, they just got trash in the playoffs again, and everyone in the league thought, well, a lot of people around the league thought he was losing his job, and then he doesn't. And so there is this, like, well, you're not going to be here that much longer, so why are we're not going to really take what you're saying seriously. But I still believe that, you know, CeeDee Lamb needs to have a conversation, and Dak Prescott needs to have a conversation with his brother and Michael
especially,
Parsons.
Especially when you're the Dallas Cowboys, too. Because, like, the microscope's always going to be on you. And it's just more added fuel for the show, like the get-ups, the first takes and all that to talk about. And it's just more distractions. So, yeah, like, they do kind of not, I don't want to say they have to, but it'll help quiet it down a bit.
Yeah, I mean, here we are in Sacramento talking about the Dallas Cowboys. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But we are, because it's an interesting topic, and it's fun to watch, and we're, like, watching from afar, but, like, this thing kind of spin out.
Well, it's like we kind of saw it, too, like you said, though, a few years ago with Bagley and his dad and Fox and stuff like that.
Yeah, there is a clear connection with the social media stuff. And, you know, like, players who live and die by social media, it can be a dark place.
Yeah.
Like, I even, you know, like, DeMarcus Cousins coming... like after a game, going right to his locker and looking at stuff on scrolling through his phone, bad news.
Yeah, like Herm Edwards said a long time ago, don't press send.
Yeah.
That's all. That's the best piece of advice you'll ever get.
There it is. The NBA, lots of crazy games last night. We had the Pelicans crush the Utah Jazz. In regulation, they put up 153, which is a franchise high, 153-124 over the Jazz. Man, are they quietly becoming one of the teams to beat in the West?
They are, but I don't know how much you can trust it. It's just the injuries. I'm always like, how many games are these guys going to play together? I think we were talking about D'Lo and Casey a few weeks ago. I'll trust the Pelicans more, I think, if they're all healthy heading into the playoffs. Because I do believe in this group. I think this group can win games, and I think they can win playoff rounds. Mm-hmm. But it's almost just kind of like you're holding your breath, waiting for that shoe to drop. Like, are you guys going to be able to, like, stay healthy throughout the season, or... like, is it gonna go bad at one point? But, like, I mean, they're healthy right now, so I'll say, like, yeah, I do buy into them right now, though.
Okay, you're buying in. And what about OKC? OKC is now tied for first place with the Timberwolves, and, like, technically speaking, they're tied with the Nuggets, although like mathematically both the Timberwolves and the Thunder are slightly above like percentage wise. But we're basically looking at a three-way tie at the top of the Western Conference. And I think it brings us to a bigger discussion, which, you know, we'll dive deep into in the next segment. But Jesse, you know, this is a really good team. Like the way that the Thunder are assembled, the way that the Pelicans are assembled, like they seem sustainable. And then I'll throw in the other one, the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, Minnesota's one that figured it out.
Yeah, so Minnesota's figured it out. OKC has figured it out. The Pelicans, if they can stay healthy, feel like they've figured it out. And all three of those teams last season, you thought they were all in a group with the Kings, right? The Kings were part of this group coming into the season where you're like, okay, you got some of these teams were above the Kings, like in the standings a year before. But you felt like they're all around the same age. They're all around the same identity. OKC might be a little bit younger than the other two, the other four teams. But we got through the 2022-23 season, and the Kings jumped up to number three in the West and looked like they had taken this monumental leap ahead of those teams. And those teams are scuffling. Like I think they all made the playoffs. But they're all like in a group.
They're all playing type teams, you know?
Yeah, they're playing type teams. Now, this season, we're looking at these guys, and they're sort of the cream of the crop in the Western Conference. OKC is number one, Minnesota tied with Minnesota with number one. The Pelicans are number five, but not that far below, you know, four, not that far below the other teams that we're talking about. And it makes me wonder, with the Kings sitting at seven, at 24-18, their recent struggles, have they taken a step back, or the other team's taken a step forward? And has there been like a shift in, if we were to sort of like create a list, a ranking of those four teams, have the Kings slid way down the list? And is there a way to move back up the list? So I think it's interesting discussion, and let's hit it after the break, because we got a lot more time to discuss. So you're listening to the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. I'm James. He is Jesse. We'll see you in just a minute.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Insiders. I'm James Hamm. Joining me, Jesse Tapia. Jesse, we were heading to the break. We were discussing this sort of wave that's happened this season where the Thunder and T-Wolves are now at the top of the Western Conference standings. Both are 30-13. The Pelicans are 26-18. And not only that, the Pelicans have, you know, really, they've throttled the Kings every time they played them this year.
Yeah, it hasn't been pretty at all.
I think one game the Kings were competitive, the other games they were not. Either way, they haven't played well against them at all. And, the Kings have beat OKC. The Kings have, they beat Minnesota at home. So I'm not saying that those teams are just flat out, the Kings can't get through them. But it sure does feel like all of a sudden those teams took a step forward, where the Kings have either stayed stagnant or maybe even regressed slightly this season. You think that's fair?
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I mean, you look at it, and I think what's kind of, I don't want to say jarring because that's kind of extreme, but what's kind of big about it is the fact that, like you said, OKC and Minnesota, their jumps, now they're at the top of the West. And you were kind of hoping for the Kings. I don't know if you were expecting them to make that much of a jump, but just kind of, like you said, they're kind of just stagnant now, and these other teams are out here leading the way.
Yeah, and I would say that coming into the season, I would have told you I thought the Denver Nuggets were the best team in the league, and especially in the Western Conference. The number two seed last year was Memphis Grizzlies, and I think we all understood that they were going to take a fall from grace.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like there was no way they were going to maintain, whether it was the fact that Steven Adams was out for the season or the fact that Ja Morant was going to miss the first 25 games, Brandon Clark. And then the injuries really started to stack up outside of that. Even, you know, Ja being out for the season, Marcus Smart not being able to play consistently. Even Desmond Bane has had injury woes. So they just feel like a team that was going to fall. But then you look at all like where the Kings are with this group, and it feels like they went from like it had a clear identity and were pushing forward to a team that now has kind of like their rudder has come loose.
Yeah, you can argue that they've possibly taken a step back this season. I don't think you can argue that they've taken any steps forward from where they left off also.
Yeah, I think individually we've seen some players take steps forward.
Yeah, Domas is having a monster season. Malik's been playing well. Fox, he's going through a little lull right now, but he's been playing well for the majority of the season.
Keegan.
Yeah, Keegan as well.
And Keegan has gone from 12 points a game to, you know, 16-plus. And so I think you can see that there's progress, but at the same time, as much as those players have taken a step forward, you know, Kevin Huerter or Harrison Barnes, you know, have taken steps backwards. And just as a collective, I think the one thing I saw from this team last year was that the Kings felt like maybe the sum of the whole was better than the pieces, right? Where the offensive design, like, it fit everybody. Everybody, like, really found a role. And you started to feel like, okay, this is a really, really high-level team. But you don't know that they're, like, sure, Fox and Sabonis are stars, but are they superstars? And, you know, like, these other pieces, they're really, really solid role players. But you started to feel like, you know, you take their roster and compare it to, like, I don't know, the Clippers, who have, like, four Hall of Famers walking in the door. That's not who the Kings were. They're more of a collective team.
Yeah, everyone kind of playing on a string and all that, I guess they say.
And I feel like this year, the players might be better, but the team as a whole is not as good. And I think that that's a bit of a concern because you're starting to see, I don't want to say a fracture, but you're starting to see where some of the glue that's holding everything together is getting a little stretched, a little brittle, and maybe like they are more individuals than they are a successful group together. And maybe that's why they've taken a bit of a step back.
Yeah, do you think it has to do, like, maybe they're playing a little bit differently this season? Because I know Mike Brown did want to try out Chris Duarte before the season started as far as that lineup. Like what do you think, like, what changed?
Well, I think part of it is when you're trying to not just develop a team for today, but develop a team for the next five-year run, right? You have to do certain things in order to make that happen. And I think everyone that watches Kings basketball can see that if the Kings are going to be great, not good, but great, that there is a way for them to be great and outside of going out and changing pieces, right? And that is for Keegan Murray to become like that second or third leading scorer, that guy who's averaging 20 points a night and bringing something different. And you can't just snap your fingers and make that happen.
That's the thing. He is a second-year player, so you can only hope for so much from him.
Yeah, and I think the progress that we're seeing, you know, from a guy who, again, if he can go, he basically this season, he went from 12 points to 16. And I'd even say by the end of the season, I think we're probably going to see him higher than that. That would be my guess. But right now he's at 16.1 points. And it hasn't been like a straight, you know, easy climb. But I'd also say, like, defensively, he's been, like, so much improved that it's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I did not expect him to take this type of leap as a defender.
He honestly, I think you can say, raised the ceiling a bit, just watching how he plays defense this year and pretty much seeing what kind of player he could be if he can reach those potentials.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that everyone compares him to, like, Chris Middleton, and very quickly you're like, oh, I see it now. Like, I mean, they're different. I mean, Middleton is a much better distributor at this point. And, you know, Murray has a long way to go to get there, but you can start to see it. But in order to take that step, sometimes you have to take a step back to take that leap forward. And it can't just all be about like, hey, I want it this season. It's got to be this season. Sometimes you have to understand that, you know, the organic growth of a team and organic growth of a player takes more than 1 year, takes more than 2 years. And you have to be patient with that process. Look at De'Aaron Fox as a rookie, averages 12 points a game. Then he goes to 17. Then he goes to 20. Then he goes to like 23 and then 20 or 25 and then back to 23 and now up to 27. Like, there is usually a process of a player getting better. And in order for the Kings to become the team they're going to become, you almost have to be patient and allow that to happen.
So with tying it back to the OKCs, the Minnesotas, and those teams passing them up, are the Kings just on a different timeline than them now?
I don't know. I think they're all on the same timeline, but they're just in different. I don't know.
Because the trade deadline's coming up too, and we don't know what moves they're gonna make or whatever. But say they do make that Jeremy Grant, Kyle Kuzma type move, like that, honestly can, I think, bring the Kings back up to that group too with those three teams.
And that's where I think I would go. I would think of those four teams, the Kings are the one in the group that you're looking at and you can see where they can make the big improvement outside of, again, like the organic growth of the Thunder just developing and becoming better, Chet Holmgren getting better. And I'd say, like again, with Chet is very much where Keegan was last year. Like, don't buy all the numbers and like how good he's been. He's been really good, right? But what he's going to be next year versus what he is today is a totally different thing.
Yeah.
And that's what you're seeing, the progression of players. Even Jalen Williams, I think, is getting better and better and better as time goes by. And so you can see where they're coming up. But I feel like OKC has almost every hole in their roster and their rotation filled right now.
Yeah, I look at OKC and I think they're a team who they'll maybe win in the first round, but they're going to be a team who, like, in the playoffs, where like they need to develop, they need another year. They have all the pieces, but now they just need to learn how to win and stuff like that.
And that's where I would say, while the Kings would probably rank lower than them in, like, what they do, they rank lower than them in the standings, but also where they are right today, I'd also say that the Kings have a better shot of being something more this season, where Oklahoma is kind of where the Kings were last year.
I agree with that one.
They're a team that's waiting to get to the playoffs to see what that feels like. The Kings have been to the playoffs. They know what it feels like. They're waiting to get to the next round of the playoffs. And I would say Minnesota is kind of the team that's lost in the middle, because they're the team that should have been better than they were last season. If they would have made this leap last year, we'd be like, okay. But again, they're waiting for a young superstar to figure it out. They're also waiting for two big men to figure out how to play together and all that stuff.
I wonder how much those guys can help them, like, come playoff time. Like, Rudy Gobert hasn't had much playoff success, but like he's been there. Cat's been there with Jimmy Butler once. Like, I wonder how much that can help them. Because like you said, like, Anthony Edwards is their leader. He is their 1A, their superstar or whatever. But like you said, he's still developing. So I wonder how much the vets are going to help them come playoff time.
Well, I wouldn't even... You missed the one vet that I think will help them the most, and that's Mike Conley. And that's the guy that I think is sort of the guy who he can... like bring them through whatever it is they're going through.
Yeah, good
right
point.
So and even when your coach goes out and lambasts your team after you lose but a player scores 62, I think it's good to have a guy in your locker room that can probably clean up a lot of that. Say, hey, look, this is I like what Chris Finch has said. He's right.
I mean, yeah, that's where the learning lessons come in, and they work for that for those kind of situations.
Yeah, I think it's just a really interesting discussion, because as of right now, I do think that the Kings are below those teams. Now, can they, by the end of the season, can they be better than those teams, or do they have a higher ceiling than some of those teams? I think they do.
The Kings, they do have it set up for them, just given you do have two All-NBA players on your squad right now, and one of them, Domantas Sabonis, has just been on fire, averaging a triple-double, it seems, nearly the season.
Yeah, I think it brings us to the other discussion. Like, I think the Kings definitely are the team of the group that almost have to make a move in order, and they have... That's where I think it's interesting. You bring up the two, you know, All-NBA players, right? The Kings do have that to build around, where, you know, you can say the Zion and Brandon Williams, or you can say Brandon Ingram, sorry. You know, you can say, you know, look at all those teams, whether it's Cat and Ant-Man, or, you know, they all have, like, their little groups, SGA and whoever you want to throw in with SGA. They have their two or three players that are really high quality. But it feels like the Kings have like a noticeable void that those other teams don't have. And it's whether the Kings can fill that void to take that next step. And then I think if you fill that void with the right player, the Kings' ceiling can definitely skip above those guys.
Yeah, because you mentioned like all those teams have like the group of two. Like they got SGA, and we'll call Jalen Williams or Chet, and then Minnesota's got theirs. I think the Kings too, what's fascinating about them, their two is more established. Like, these are guys who've been in the league and all that. Like, Sabonis and Fox, they're in the prime of their careers, about 26, 27 years old. Mm-hmm. So you got guys who have been around, won a little, lost a lot or whatever. But you bring in that third guy, like, that's just, like I said, it's just the little rocket ship that they need to get over the hump.
Yeah. The Kings, they're venturing out on a season-long seven-game road trip. Starts tomorrow night in Golden State, right? And it's Golden State and then Dallas, and then they're all over the place. They're flying all over the country for the better part of 2 weeks. And they'll come back. I think their last game is February 5th on the road. They come back for February 7th to play Detroit. And then that next day, you have the NBA trade deadline. So in a weird way, we watched the Kings play the other night at home. It's possible that game was the last time in Sacramento that group of players are going to be together. And it's kind of weird because now they're gone. They're going to be they're holding practice today at noon, but like I won't be there because, you know, the show runs until noon. But it does feel sort of like we may have watched the last of that iteration of the Kings. What do you think this team is going to look like coming back from the road? Or do you think it's going to be the same and like we're still going to be waiting to see what happens in that last 24 hours, 48 hours of the trade deadline?
I think this, I'm at the point where I think this team does need a move, but I'm not sure if it's coming though. My mind's been stuck on the Jeremy Grants and the Kyle Kuzmas, but I'm not sure if Monty McNair is going to be willing to part with the picks for that. Like, I do think they need a move, but I'm not sure it's going to be made though.
Okay.
And if I had to put my money, I'd say it'll probably be, at least for the main guys, and all, it'll be the same team coming back, I think.
Okay. Like, we know who their untouchables are, right? So we know that Sabonis and Fox and Murray, completely untouchable. But if you think they are going to make a move, who is going to be gone when they get back?
I'm going to go Kevin Huerter.
Okay.
I think Kevin Huerter, just because for some reason I think Mike Brown likes Harrison Barnes. Like, he likes him in the lineup. He's stuck by Harrison Barnes. I don't want to say he's made excuses for Harrison Barnes, but he's defended why he's kept him in the lineup and all that. He's talked about, I think, before how they don't draw up plays for him, and that's why he's not really getting his shots up and all that. So I think they'd stick by Harrison Barnes more.
I mean, certainly the shooting guard position is typically easier to fill than the small forward or power forward position that the Kings really need. I thought it was interesting yesterday when we were talking to Jerry Reynolds. You know, he wants to see two. He, you know, wants the long wing defender. And then on top of that, he also like would really like to see them go add the 4-5 that can play alongside Sabonis and block shots. He brought up Jalen Smith, which I thought was an interesting bring, an interesting add to the discussion. I like Jalen Smith as a player, but I'm not sure that Jalen Smith is a guaranteed top of the rotation player that changes everything. And so I get where that may or may not work. Like, that can be one of a couple of moves, but I don't think that can be the move that gets you to the next level.
Yeah, because like with Huerter too, is just he's been the guy who's just kind of like his place has just been kind of like teetered all season, I feel like.
Yeah, but I think the problem is when he's right, you see how much he can change.
Yeah, how impactful he is. Yeah,
yeah, and I'd also say at 25, he's 6 years younger than Harrison Barnes. And their contracts are similar. Huerter's goes up a little bit. Well, they're probably almost identical over the next couple of years. Percentage-wise, they're like between 12 and 13% of the salary cap. And I think maybe it would be easier to move Huerter just because of his age.
Yeah, I was going to ask you right now, like, as a team, like, you're taking something back from the Kings, like, would you rather have a Kevin Huerter or a Harrison Barnes? Because they both do have, like, a couple of years left on their deals, right?
Yeah, they both have at least 2 years after this year. I know Barnes has 2 years after this year. Huerter was in, when he got traded to the Kings, he started a 4-year 65. So yeah, he's got 2 years left. And it goes something like 17-5, 19-5, something like that. So it's not like crazy. But I would also say it depends on who you're dealing with, right? So if you're dealing with a team that's loaded the shooting guard spot, they may say, hey, we would prefer Harrison Barnes. If you're dealing with a team that's good right now and is looking to improve, and but they have a piece that doesn't fit their roster and you want to do a switch out for, you know, to give them more of like a third/fourth scorer where they have like too many of the like the 3-and-D non-scorer types, that might make sense. But I think in a perfect world for the Kings, they would probably offer Harrison Barnes before they would offer Kevin Huerter. That's just my opinion, though.
Yeah, I think that's the way I would go too. But I just, like I said, I don't know. Kevin just kind of hasn't fully found his footing this season. But looking at like it seemed like the Wizards. Looking at the Wizards, like they'd probably be a team that take HB back more so than Kevin Huerter. Do you think?
I think they would, but the reason is different than you might think. I think the reason why they would take back Harrison Barnes is because they could flip Harrison Barnes for more assets.
That's a good point.
So, I mean, I think that that's with Harrison Barnes. There are plenty of teams that look at Harrison Barnes and say, okay, we know who he is and we know how he would fit with our team. And, you know, a team like Cleveland has liked Harrison Barnes in the past. They would love to get their hands on a guy who you realistically, even though the Kings fans are upset with Harrison Barnes and what he's bringing right now, like, just go back to last season, 15 points a game, you know, and I know it's something that you've said, just give me 13 points a game. Like, give me something where I know what you're bringing. But I think in a different situation, he can be that guy. The fact that he can play 30 plus minutes a night and hone is actually a big thing.
Yeah, I think he can still play ball. I think he just needs a new situation where he's not the fifth or sixth option on the team too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I think for his numbers to go back up, that's what you need. Like either that or the Kings just need to say, hey, we have to get him involved more, which is something they did the other night. But outside of that, they haven't done the entire season. I think opening night, Harrison Barnes was a statement because he had such a bad start to the previous season. And then it just like quickly faded away. But I think that's what we're kind of seeing is like Harrison Barnes saying, like, look, here I am. You know, don't forget about me. I'm still here. And after that, you know, I think he faded and kind of he's playing his role, but accepting too much of the role. And at some point you have to ask a player to do more. And like, can he do more? I'm not sure. Like he can be a better rebounder, but I don't know that Harrison Barnes at 31 can be a better defender than he is today.
Taking a look at the Charity House real quick. Terrence brings up a name. Charlotte seems like they're gonna have a fire. So would you take Gordon Hayward here?
I wouldn't.
No?
No.
Because of injuries?
The injuries. He's an expiring contract. I mean, look, if you're looking to clear cap space, sure, go ahead and trade for him. I just don't know that there's that much left in the tank. And his salary to what he is not equal. Like, if you were to go out and sign Gordon Hayward this offseason to be your backup small forward, okay, that's fine. But then we're talking about a league minimum deal, or we're talking about $8 million a year or something.
Yeah, and you wonder if he even feels he's at that point of his career.
Yeah, like when he is at that point of his career, though. Like, you know, if you're looking at a guy who's 28, I mean, that's like still making $25 million bucks a year, like there's no way to make a trade that makes sense because in all honesty, I don't think he would give you more than what Harrison Barnes would give you right now. Like, sure, he might score more points, but defensively,
yeah, you're not getting much there.
No, you can get worse defensively. Like, I know that sounds ridiculous, but you actually can, and I think you would get worse in that situation. And you know, Harrison Barnes played 82 games last year. He hasn't missed a game this year. Like, there is something to the fact that that guy goes out and plays every single night. And Gordon Hayward makes $31.5 million and as an expiring contract. So I get the sentiment there, and I don't mind Gordon Hayward. Like, it's, we've talked about this in the past. Like, Jeremy Grant was never like really high on my list of players that the Kings could go get because I didn't think Jeremy Grant by himself would be good enough to change the direction of the Kings. Jeremy Grant with the current roster is a totally different story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think he fits. It's just like I used to bring up Chris Duarte. Why did the Kings draft Chris Duarte? Well, the Kings weren't at a point where drafting a 24-year-old rookie made sense. Chris Duarte is a 26-year-old two-year vet. It makes a lot more sense with the team you have, but at the time it didn't make sense. So I think players and like fits and stuff are a lot of time it's situational. If you were to trade with Charlotte, I would still like PJ Washington is a guy that I would go get.
Yeah, it makes sense. So let's say that they don't make any moves and this is the team coming back and this is the team the rest of the season. I mean, you could say maybe they make a lower level role player time move or whatever if you want, but let's say like the core group or like this is like the main group. Like you think getting past the trade deadline can maybe give them a little kick in the ass that they need?
Yeah. I also think that history helps. So last season, after the trade deadline, when you didn't make a deal, you became this galvanized team that like went on to be one of the better teams in the league in the second half of the season, in the last 25, 27 games of the season, right? They were really, really good after the deadline until the last couple of last like week of the season where games didn't matter. So for me, yeah, I think it would clarify a lot of things. It would take the stress off a lot of people that are in there inside the walls, and it would like help push you forward. But I don't know if it's enough. Again, you're going into the second half of the season like you did last season with like glaring weaknesses, and people, I bring up last season so many times. I brought up like a handful of players, right? But like the Mason Plumlee of the world, Matisse Thybulle, like those were deals where you could have played on the peripheral, used second round picks, and improved your roster. We get to the playoffs, and what did they lose out on? Number one, you couldn't stop Steph. And number two, you couldn't get an offensive rebound or a defensive rebound. And
yeah, Kevon Looney just dominated.
So I would ask again the people that were questioning why I kept saying those things, would Mason Plumlee and Matisse Thybulle helped you in those two aspects?
Yeah, they wouldn't have hurt. Know that for sure.
They would not have hurt. Yeah, it would have given you more options when Sabonis was being like shoved around by three guys in the box and you need someone else to rebound. okay, you got somebody. It also would have helped. You would have had a player that you could have sent at Steph Curry, and no one's going to stop Steph, but would have made life a little more difficult on him than a 6 foot tall version of the same, you know, in Davion Mitchell. Like, you didn't have the specific players you needed. And like, look, Kessler Edwards is a perfectly fine player to go get at the trade deadline as a, like a low budget and actually make some money off the deal. But that wasn't a franchise altering thing that would have changed you from being a team that made it to the first round to making it to the second round. And sometimes it is those little tweaks. I don't know that that's what this team needs though. Like the little tweak, I don't think we're there anymore. I think the bigger tweak, and it doesn't have to be Pascal Siakam. It doesn't have to be a $40, $50 million a year player, but it certainly could be a $20 to $30 million player that helps change the direction, not just for this season, but for the next, you know, five seasons.
What about Mikal Bridges? Would you give up the picks for him?
Yeah, I'd give up whatever they want.
All right, yeah, I'm the same with him. I think that is the player. I don't know how attainable he is or whatever and how much Brooklyn wants to let him go, but that, for me, is the guy that checks every box that the Kings need.
Yeah, there were rumors that they were offered 5 first-round picks for him when they traded for him, but we don't know who that was because, I mean, again, to have 5 first-round picks, there's not that many teams out there with 5 first-round picks, but was that a Knicks team that has extra? Was that the Oklahoma City Thunder?
Well, I'm sure you look at it too. The Nets' mindset at the time is like, what am I going to need these 5 first-round picks for? Like, we got Mikal Bridges, we got Cam Johnson. We're building something here. Like, we need to start adding players, not picks. So now we're at a point where it's like, you sure you don't want these picks now?
Well, and, you know, they tried to do that. You know, they went out and added Dorian Finney-Smith. They added, who's the guy they got from the Jazz, the defensive
Royce O'Neal.
Royce O'Neal. Right, so they did do exactly what you're saying, but maybe they are in a different situation now. Maybe they would listen now, but I don't know that there is a deal out there that 5 first-round picks. But like the Kings, they could offer 3 first-round picks and 2 pick swaps, and it's going to take that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like for the Nets, I think the value of like you're not getting 5 first-round picks anymore because now everyone knows you're selling.
Yeah. I would totally agree with that. Like most people understand that you are selling, and I think the value of first round picks are different. And nobody wants a 2024 first round pick because the draft isn't considered that great. So there are a lot of teams out there like, we want picks, but we want future picks. Like that would be a move where if the Kings were to pull something like that off. And again, one of the sneaky things about Mikal Bridges is that his contract is absolutely brilliant. So He's under contract this year at 21.7. So in your like, you could easily just package like Davion Mitchell and Harrison Barnes, and you're actually over his salary. I think Harrison Barnes for him straight up swap works, just to match salary. That's what I'm saying, just to match salary. But then you're looking at 21.7, 23.3, and 24.5. Like he's a player that will keep your salary in the right range as you have all of these other expenses that are coming in. As De'Aaron Fox, like when he does sign his new contract is going to be much, much bigger than what it is now. Like we're talking about the Jaylen Brown, where the final year he's making $70 million. That's where this is going with Fox, right? So you need to protect yourself in that way. The same with Sabonis' contract going up. Keegan Murray's going to need a new contract. These are all things that you have to consider. This is a guy that keeps you very solvent the next 2 years after this season.
Yeah, if I'm Monty McNair, I'm pushing hard for Mikal Bridges.
Perfect fit.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect fit. All right, we're going to continue this discussion. You know what? We're going to shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit of 49ers with the NFC Championship game this weekend. What scares you about the Lions? Because I think there are a lot of things that should scare you about the Lions and that matchup against the 49ers. So we'll be back after the break. I am James. He is Jesse. We are the Insiders on ESPN 1320.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.